Are Kyrie and James Harden going to sign their extension?
His trade value is not there. And when you hear reports...
Phil has been paid $16 million of his $33 million salary.
I know about people that have certain clauses
what
in their contract.
What happens next year with Giannis Antetokounmpo? He will be eligible for a Supermax next summer. If he re-signs, a new reality is the players are going to move around. And the players are not going to want to spend their whole, you know, life...
And because they didn't want to go into the penalty of the luxury tax, they traded James Harden. Somebody's going to be making $50 million
a year. He probably could have made a little bit more money this summer in free agency.
I think he could have got a lot more in the offseason. When you got a chance to secure the bag,
you do.
No question.
What's going on, party people? I'm your host, Steven Bagel, and this is the Bird Rights Podcast. I apologize for the hiatus. You guys are probably wondering, if you don't already know, why I haven't recorded a podcast in a couple months. Unfortunately, it was that time of year again where I had to take another bar exam, unfortunately. So I put that behind me. I am churning forward. And yeah, so as you guys remember, last year I did a series where I basically did off-season reviews slash season previews. So this is actually going to be the first one in a long series of team previews and off-season reviews, or vice versa, off-season. You guys get the idea. It is Matt Modena from the Believe in Wizards podcast. For those of you who don't remember, Matt was our Wizards representative in the mock trade deadline this past year. So first of all, Matt, how are you doing today?
Great, man. Good to be back. I think we'll have hopefully a happier conversation than the last time. So I'm excited about this one.
Yeah. And forgive me for forgetting. You came on Bird Rights the first time to talk about the mock trade deadline and moves you've made.
Correct. Yeah.
The one definitive move I recall you making was the Kyle Kuzma one, where he went to the Kings for Keegan Murray. And obviously we talked about, okay, this isn't exactly realistic, but sure. It happened in our exercise. And now, you know, we finally see the Wizards blow it up. And then Kuzma resigns.
Yeah, he's the last remaining one from the three, which is a little surprising, to be honest.
The very lucrative big three, as you would call it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Matt, when we first started, you know, talking about like the mock trade deadline and just the Wizards in general, it was, okay, the Wizards need to blow it up. The Wizards need to blow it up. The Wizards need to blow it up. Never happened. Now, after all these years, it was just mediocrity. And again, I'm a Sixers fan. Whether you think the process worked or not, I'm a big proponent of it. I mean, no, the worst basically could be is mediocrity. You're not good enough to compete, and you're not bad enough to get draft picks. So first of all, how does it feel? I mean, like, the Wizards haven't really blown it up to this extent. Since when? Since they got the number one pick and got John Wall?
Yeah, 13 years. Yeah.
So first of all, how does that feel?
It feels great. It's like a relief, honestly. Like, there's some like modicum of hope for the future. So it's like a weight's been lifted.
Absolutely. And again, process, everyone acts like, oh, it was 25 years. It was, I think, four bad seasons. They won 19, 18, 10. I'm saying like really bad seasons.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So, you know, you see Houston got impatient. I know they tanked for 2 or 3 years and already signing Van Vliet to maxes and trying to be competitive. So I don't think it's going to be as long as we're anticipating, but of course the butt of the joke is, oh, Wizards waited for after the Wemby draft to rebuild. But
wasn't ideal, but
Cooper Flagg is in 2025.
That's right.
Pass, and then you have Cam Boozer in 26. Next year, we don't know. There is not a clear, distinct number one pick. But, you know, we said that about the 2020 class with Anthony Edwards. Yeah. We said this is a very weak class.
Someone always steps up.
Yeah, you end up getting Anthony Edwards, Halliburton, LaMelo, Tyrese Maxey, Desmond Bane. You got guys out of that class. So I'm not going to call any draft class weak anymore, but so far there's clearly no definitive number one for the Wizards.
Hashtag capture the flag. That's the plan. I think shoot 2 years out and we'll be okay with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So the offseason kind of kicks off with Tommy Shepard being, I forget if, whether he was relieved of his duties or he stepped down.
He was let go sort of late into the process. He gave an interview where he was like dismissive of the notion that he wouldn't just be here long term, and then made some comments and basically kind of gave excuses for why they weren't a playoff team. And then I think the ownership had enough at that point.
So that brings me to my first question. when Corbin Ford and I did our front office rankings, we ranked basically the top executive for every team from 1 to 30. Back-to-back years, I had Tommy Shepard at 30th. Or if I didn't have a third, I might have had Rob Pelinka 30th 2 years ago, and Tommy Shepard might have been 29. But either way, he was a bottom-of-the-barrel executive, in my opinion. Do you think – who do you attribute the unwillingness to tank up until this point? I mean, obviously, they got rid of him, and then they blew it up. So
it was definitively Ted Leonsis, the owner. He banged his fist on the table and made this big – you know, spectacle of we will never, ever tank. Like, we sell merch for our show that says we will never, ever tank on it because that was his, like, we will always shoot for the playoffs kind of thing. And, you know, when Tommy Shepard got hired or got elevated to the job in the first place, it was we're shooting for the playoffs. And then it became, well, we're shooting for the play-in. And expectations just sort of lowered themselves. And I think, honestly, fans are kind of responsible for that changing, and national media to some extent, because the only times anybody ever talked about the Wizards were to make fun of them. And I think as an owner, you know, you don't get to be a billionaire and, without having some amount of ego. And I think it just finally became too much. So, you know, Tommy Shepard kind of fell on the sword for that one.
Okay. So the first move personnel wise we see in terms of players was Bradley Beal. And Corbin and I also did an emergency pod after that Bradley Beal trade. And my question to him was, oh, after seeing the return for Bradley Beal, are we ever going to see a no trade clause in the NBA again?
Someone will get desperate enough to do it, but I think it'll be very, very rare. Like, there's always, whenever I say never and do something definitive, some stupid front office gets panicky and does something that they shouldn't. So I think you'll see one or two maybe, but it's not going to be a regular thing. And some of these guys, it's essentially a no-trade clause anyway. I mean, they have as much leverage as they want. So it's kind of in name only. Like, we're seeing that with Dame to some extent. He can shoot down that deal just as much as Beal can. So it's, you know, it restricts you a little bit more. But, yeah, I don't think there's any need to give anybody, you know, one of those unless that's what it'll take to get him signed, I guess.
Well, my next question is in regard to Beal is – everyone's talking about, oh, they didn't even get a first-round pick for Beal. They got, essentially, the worst offer they could get. Because Beal kind of dictated, I want to go to Phoenix and nowhere else. And that's kind of why they had to settle for the package they got. But given Beal's contract, how many first-round picks prior to the Beal trade were you expecting for him? With how bloated the contract? I mean, I know, like, sure, Paul George went for that crazy outlandish package that OKC ended up getting, but that was also to bring in Kawhi Leonard to get Paul George. Like, I just don't see a scenario where Beal would have gotten more than a singular first-round pick to begin with, even without
the players. I thought maybe, like, two really late firsts was sort of best-case scenario. And you probably end up having to take some bloated contracts back in the process to get that, so is it really even worth it? The more I thought about it, this deal was not really as bad as kind of my initial reaction. And I actually have kind of come around completely just given the rest of the front office, you know, super group that they assembled there. These are all guys that have rebuilt teams or helped rebuild teams quickly. So I think the expectation is that by 2026, they're not going to be much worse than they were while they had Beal and those guys. So it's not a long-term really step back from where they were. And those pick swaps with Phoenix could end up being really valuable. Like, Booker might be the only guy left on that roster by 2026. And, you know, he'll be 30 or whatever by then. How much help does he have? Or does he want to move on when these other guys leave? So that actually could be more valuable than the 27th pick, you know, from next year's draft or something like that.
Yeah, people talk about all the time now that you mention it. Oh, they didn't get a first round pick. A pick swap is, you know, a first-round pick if the team is bad enough or you're good enough. Sure. If the pick has a good shot of swapping, it's a first-round pick. Sure, you don't get it tangibly that you get your own pick and theirs, but I just wanted to refute that notion. So then let's move on to Kristaps Porzingis. He had a player option, so he either could have opted out and just walked in free agency or worked on a sign-in trade, or the alternative scenario was he could opt in and work on a trade because clearly he wasn't in Washington's plans. So we saw the first trade go down to Boston where Malcolm Brogdon went to the Clippers. And I think Wizards were getting like Marcus Morris and Emile Coffey, if I'm remembering correctly. Yeah, and I think pick 29 mm-hmm. in the draft.
Yeah.
They end up getting pick 35 instead by the time the deal's finalized. So, sure, you didn't get a first-round pick for Porzingis, but it was only six picks later than what you're initially going to get anyway. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that's a big deal at all. But then, you know, you bring in Tyus Jones in that deal, which is ironic that Washington all these years hasn't had a legitimate point guard when they're trying to be competitive. And now when, okay, it's time to reset and retool the roster, and Tyus Jones might be the best point guard they've had.
For most of the last decade, especially, they've needed a backup point guard. And they kind of have like a bunch right now that are respectable. Like, I mean, obviously, they've since moved Monte Morris, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But they had Monte, DeLon Wright, and Tyus Jones on the same roster. And any of them would have been like a super backup point guard. So just kind of like the universe kind of giving us the finger a little bit. But yeah, Jones is a decent pickup. He's young enough that you can see if he makes sense with this group and this time frame, or you can just flip him for somebody, you know, down the line that needs a point guard. So I think that was a good pickup. And I would have liked them to actually use that 35th pick. They ultimately traded down again, but that's okay. I mean, it's fine. I think you weren't going to keep Porzingis anyway. So essentially, you were trading for the right to help him sign where he wanted to sign otherwise. So it's really just minimal get back, and you're not tying yourself up to money that, you know, you may or may not use. Now you see Porzingis is actually hurt. He's got the plantar fasciitis flaring up at the moment. Boston doesn't seem too worried about it, but it would have been very Wizards to re-sign him to a long-term deal, not make a move to keep him, and then stuff about the foot come out, mm-hmm. and they'd be saddled with a guy on a $100 million deal, you know, for the next 4 years or something like that. So I'm glad they just made the move, got it done, pulled the Band-Aid, and actually didn't, like, let this one simmer for too long.
And then the next trade I want to talk about is one that I actually loved when it came out, and that was the Jordan Poole trade.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Jordan Poole does have a little bit of a bad rap given the notion of how poorly he played this year. Sure. Given the contract, obviously, when he was on a rookie contract, mm-hmm. he has much better value than when he was on $25 million a year for 4 years. Yeah. 4 years, because So first of all, tell me why Jordan Poole is going to lead the league in scoring.
I'm sort of like the odd man out with most of the fan base here. I think everyone's convinced themselves that he'll come in and just do what Beal did and put up 30 points a game and be a supernova and go back to the guy we saw in that playoff run for the Warriors when they won the title, and or the guy that we saw when Steph Curry's been out and he averaged 25 points a game. I think he's probably somewhere in the middle between that version of him and what he was last year, which I think is still a pretty good player considering the money, and there's an opportunity for him to grow and get better. And I'd love to be wrong and have him just go absolutely apeshit this year and score 35 a game and look nuts. But I'll just take a solid, you know, low 20s, decent efficiency, move the ball around, play a little tiny bit of defense for the first time in his career might be nice, but maybe that's wishful thinking.
Well, it's funny you just mentioned, average 25 points a game when Steph Curry's out. I think the biggest issue with Poole is that he's just not a six man.
Mm-hmm.
Like I just don't think he was able to adapt to the role, because every time Steph Curry went down for a prolonged period of time, he stepped up. He was more efficient. He obviously had bigger numbers because Steph was out. But it takes a special kind of guy to be a six man. It takes a Jamal Crawford. It takes a Lou Will. That's why those guys won the award multiple times. I think Jordan Poole isn't that. He's not just, no fault of his own. I just don't think he's wired like that. I think he's okay. I want to be the star guy, and sure, maybe it's an ego thing. Maybe it's not. I don't know him personally, so I don't want to speculate, but I just don't think a six man role was suitable for him. So I'm excited to see him as a number one or number two option on a team.
I'm getting old and forgetful, but I think he was mostly a sixth man his last year at Michigan. And I think if you're someone like him, you know, you feel like you've blossomed out of that. So maybe that's a step back to be a guy that, you know, has put up these numbers when Curry's there or when Curry's out. And now you've got to kind of take a backseat to some of these guys, especially someone like Clay, who looked a little older at points last year, or some of those, you know, other guys that weren't super effective, you know, that were playing minutes ahead of him. So maybe it's a confidence thing too. He seems like the irrational confidence guy, but when you're kind of yo-yoed back and forth and your minutes and your usage and things like that change, it's just maybe harder to get into a rhythm and stuff too. So I think having him have the ball He's not worried about getting pulled or benched for in favor of anybody else. He's not worried about everyone else on the roster looking at him as if he's the problem. So I think just getting away from all the drama will be good
for him
mentally.
Doesn't have to worry about getting punched in the face by a teammate.
Yeah, which I think would be a relief for any of us, right? Like, I would do my best work if I didn't think if I walked around the corner wrong, someone was going to just jab me in the face. So I'll take it.
So, yeah, one more thing about that trade that I found interesting now and at the time is when they traded Beal, they traded Porzingis, they kept trading for expiring deals. The Wizards, as an organization, wanted cap flexibility. I mean, Chris Paul was expiring. Landry Shamet has a non-guarantee, so he's de facto expiring. Right. Tyus Jones is expiring. Every guy they brought in, Mike Muscala, Gallinari, all expiring. Then all of a sudden, they go the opposite way of trading Chris Paul's expiring into Jordan Poole. I have no qualms with it, but it is definitely something I've heard just out there. Chris Paul, they were talking about buying out at one point. So I think the fact that they got a potential building block, I don't think Paul is the building block, but I think he's a piece, a piece of the rebuild at least. So I think given, you know, yes, $25 million is a lot for Jordan Poole a year, the Wizards were going to have $70 million to spend in cap space.
Yep.
Realistically, when was the last big free agent the Wizards have signed?
That's been another problem with our, you know, our track record the last half a decade or decade, honestly. But yeah, I'm with you. You had to spend that money longer term eventually. I don't mind it going to a guy. And I don't know if Poole's a piece or not, but I think it's worth it to find out.
Yeah.
And worst case scenario, you know, like I said, he's good, but not great. I still think that deal in 2 years looks fine. I mean, like salary caps are going up.
Yeah.
Players like him, you know, probably going to age pretty well, and he'll be, you know, hitting his prime by that point. And with 2 years left, somebody's not going to bat their eyelashes at, you know, it's a $25 million. Like, is that too rich for our blood? So I'm not worried about that in any way, shape, or form. Like, it's worth it to take a shot on a young guy to do that rather than some old geezer that you're just throwing too much money at for no reason.
Which actually brings me to my next point. That was a great segue. You must have read my mind. But with $70 million in cash space, really what most rebuilding teams do nowadays is take on bad money that other teams don't want. And use our cap space that way to accumulate more assets from, you know, that bad comp by taking on that bad contract. So Jordan Poole basically himself was the asset. So like, would you rather have Davis Bertans and I know he's on OKC now, but obviously Dallas was looking to move him to a lead of space. Would you rather have Davis Bertans in a late first? Probably late first, as long as Luka's there. Or would you rather take a shot on Jordan Poole?
If Poole even looks just average at the end of the day, you could flip him for the late first.
That's
if he ends
saying.
Up look exactly. Yeah, I'm totally with you. If he ends up looking really good, then you get way more than that. So I think it's a higher reward and not necessarily a higher risk. So I think the way they played this is actually really smart.
The next piece I want to go to is the re-signing of Kyle Kuzma. I mean, Washington, and again, I'm going to go back to our mock trade deadline where you traded Kuzma. Obviously, there was no Keegan Murray on the table. Like, there wasn't the mock trade deadline. But you and I, in the DMs, talked about, are the Wizards out of their mind that they think they're just going to re-sign this guy and not trade him for anything at the deadline? And that's, you know, goes in the conversation, they need to blow it up, trade him for an asset because he's going to walk anyway, not going to re-sign him. But I think once you cleared all that future cap flexibility, like once you made that cap flexibility, it made Kuzma, okay, he has no other market unless Indiana or Sacramento were going to sign him. And then Harrison Barnes, the free agency, ends up re-signing with Sacramento anyway. He doesn't really have a market. So why are we going to let him walk and lose him for nothing when we just re-sign him and trade him later? He's going to put up numbers. He's not the most inefficient guy. I mean, his percentage is going to look okay. It's not so he's not an awful defender. He's not a good defender, but he holds his own.
See, I disagree. I actually think he's a really good defender.
Okay.
That's
good for them then.
I agree. I think this year, a lot of times, there's one specific game that comes to mind, especially, but he guarded both Dame and Anthony Simons for almost the entire game. They didn't put DeLon Wright on either of those guys. They didn't put Denny on those guys. And afterwards, actually, Simons got hurt, but they talked to Dame and he's like, man, it's just so hard to shoot over Kuzma. Even if you make stuff and the percentage, you know, defensive field goal doesn't look good for him, he makes me work so hard because one, he can stay with me. And two, he's just got so much length. And just kept hearing that over and over again over the course of the year. Most defensive metrics have him one or two on the team. I think DeLon Wright's been one of the best team defenders, but he doesn't play enough minutes to be crazy impactful. Denny being the other top up defender. So at the very least, if Kuzma is one of your three or four best defenders on the team, I think that's we'll take that at this point. You know, it's not the main thing you sign him for, but the positional versatility there is huge. And I think he's a Will Dawkins, you know, kind of guy, essentially. It's another big, flexible defender that you could have guards one, two, threes, fours, and just be reasonably solid at any of them. You can switch one through four, maybe even five in some situations. So I think that's another advantage he brings to the table.
And he's, you know, we just talked about Jordan Poole's contract. Kuzma's contract's very tradable down the line.
Yeah.
So
it decreases every year. That's great. I mean, two seasons from now, that's going to be so easy for them to trade.
Yeah. And again, they only need so much cap flexibility. Okay. The thing I was thinking of when putting together my show notes was I keep remembering that 2021 Lakers team with the three max contracts of AD, LeBron, and Westbrook. And then they had Kendrick Nunn on the taxpayer MLE. And then they had, I believe, 11 minimums. Everyone said, we need to trade Westbrook. We need to make trade. We need to do this. We need to do that. Westbrook's $47 million is already so difficult to trade. But I preface that to say, they traded Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. They traded Montrezl Harrell. And they traded Kuzma. All guys are making about $10 to $15 million and turn that into one bloated $47 million contract. So when it didn't work, they weren't able to make trades because they didn't have anybody to salary match. Because they had all 11 other guys on minimums and three guys on maxes.
Yep.
So I just like the Wizards. And we're going to get into the DeLone Wright, the Gallinari, the Muscala, the Shamet. All those guys are expiring and they're going to be able to, you know, package those guys to take on a more bloated contract attached to an asset.
Yep.
But Kuzma, Poole, they become trade chips essentially as well.
Yep.
Because they're on tradable contracts. Mm-hmm. You can move them. And you can move them for something decent because odds are if you're salary matching, unless you're going to bring back multiple pieces, you're going to bring back a guy in similar salary, especially with the new CBA. So yeah,
that's a huge point that I think Wizards fans, especially the ones who didn't like Kuzma, are like, oh my God, why would we give him this much money? Well, if you want to trade for that bigger guy down the line, you need exactly what you just said. Somebody's going to have to make the salaries match, and he's a huge piece to help you get to whatever you need to do matching wise. He can be flipped to a third team. Like anyone could take on that contract if they wanted to, or you can combine him with all these other guys and, you know, make a bigger deal. So it's a no brainer to me.
The next guy I'm interested in, we talked about a little bit, is Tyus Jones. Tyus is obviously a guy who was looking for a bigger role, and that's why Memphis, you know, made him expendable. Even with Ja Morant missing 20-plus games, I know they got Marcus Smart, but I think Smart would have been better in the Dylan Brooks role rather than the Tyus Jones role. But either way, he wanted a bigger role. Even before that trade happened, I think it was Jake Fisher of Yahoo said, you know, the Grizzlies are looking to move Tyus Jones. Mutually, he wants a bigger role as a starter full-time, and Grizzlies are willing to accommodate that. So Tyus Jones is an expiring deal. Again, $14 million. He's very tradable. So, or just what do you think of the outlook of him? I mean, is he a guy you consider moving at the deadline, or is that a guy, okay, we have his bird rights, let's try to re-sign him after this year? Or is it too early to tell given the season hasn't even started yet?
Yeah, like statistically, he and Monte Morris were almost the exact same in like every category last year, and they could only flip Monte for a second round pick. So I don't know what Tyus really gets you back. Maybe like best case is like a really late first, and that'd be okay too. I think at the end of the day, like he's a good enough table setter to help you play competent enough basketball to really evaluate what these other guys on your team bring to the table. Like your floor is at least a certain amount. If you have just a really solid point guard that's going to put everybody in position to be successful. So I think that's what it'll do. And you just really see how it works out around the other pieces you have. If you think Poole's a building block, if you think Kuzma is potentially a building block, which I don't know what they really think about Kuzma long-term. If you think Bilal Coulibaly is enough to be like this future of your team, you see how they all gel with Tyus Jones and you make a decision based on that. You can either re-sign him cheaply and use up the rest of your cap space, or you can, you know, flip him for something else at the deadline if you wanted to. Like, they've got a lot of options. And I think just for them, you've got those two bigger salaries. Everybody else being a flexible trade piece is really smart.
You mentioned Bilal Coulibaly. I'm going to throw four young asset players that the Wizards possess in the organization at you.
Okay.
You're going to tell me not only your opinion. I know you're a big draft guy. Friend of the pod, Rafael Barlow, actually coined you one of the most knowledgeable, you know, team-specific guys in terms of the draft there is.
Very nice of him, by the way.
Absolutely. But if Rafael holds you in high esteem, I obviously hold you in high esteem as well anyway. But so what the first guy let's talk about is Coulibaly. I mean, obviously he was teammates with Wemby in France. Wizards had to trade up a pick or two picks. I remember they traded with Indiana and Indiana got Jairus anyway. I think they just traded up the one pick, flipped with Indiana to get him. But I mean, just what do you think about Coulibaly and how he's going to fit in with this team? Like, is he a legitimate building block or is he too raw that we have no idea?
He might be too raw that you have no idea, but I think the theoretical upside is of a long-term building block piece, right? I think the best case scenario for Jairus Walker or Taylor Hendricks is like a real good role player. Yeah. Whereas Coulibaly, this is a guy that was a point guard, you know, when he was 6 feet tall, grew 6-7 inches, started the year as a under 21 player, not expecting to get a lot of minutes. He gets called up because they needed basically young bodies to practice with Wembanyama because they only played one day a week. And by the end of the season, this was a guy like running pick and roll and like deciding games of the French League Championship. So I think there's a lot there, whether or not he ends up capitalizing on all those things and the Wizards can put the right people around him to help him develop. We'll see. I think their new assistant coaches are really exciting from that perspective. You have Brian Keefe that Kevin Durant said was super helpful to him in continuing to refine his game in Brooklyn. You've got David Vanderpool, who both CJ McCollum and Dame Lillard raved about how he helped them. So I think those are good moves for them from this, like, okay, we're really going to focus on helping our young guys maximize. And I think that's going to put Coulibaly in the best position to reach that potential, which I think is really high. I think Rafael Barlow just interviewed him, and it was a great interview, by the way. But he also was of the same opinion that I was, that if Coulibaly ended up in next year's draft, this is a guy that could have challenged for like a top three pick. And so if you can get him essentially at 8 and use your 2 second-round picks to get up to 7, that's worth it to me, because the upside of anyone else left in that draft at that point, he probably had the highest. So if you're the Wizards and you're going to suck, you might as well swing as big as humanly possible. We haven't had an athletic, bouncy wing in a very long time, I'll just say. So I think this was a nice move at trying to be like a more modern basketball team. So I'm all for it.
Next guy I have is Denis Avdija. I still think Joey's out on him. Same thing as Coulibaly. He's a little bit more, what's the term I'm looking for? He's more developed than Coulibaly was coming into the league. But I still feel like he's shown defensive chops for sure. He's shown passing chops well before he came into the league. But I mean, is he just a guy at this point, or is it still, he's going into year 3, I think it is.
Four. Yeah, I think it's 50-50 whether he's on the roster at the end of the season. He's going to really have to show something, and we'll see what that looks like. If he's, you know, if he can shoot it, maybe that's kind of the swing skill for him. I know it is for a lot of guys, but if you're a 6'8" kind of secondary, maybe tertiary playmaker that can't really dribble with your non-dominant hand, you only drive going right, and you don't really finish that well around the rim, like, you have to shoot it. And he really hasn't at this point. He's kind of worked extensively with a premier shooting coach this offseason. Looks a little more fluid. We'll see. You never know what those like workout videos actually mean in the real world. But I think that unlocks everything for him. If people actually have to close out on him, then he can go by guys. He's strong enough to guard bigger players. You know, they can put bigger guys on him. He's quick enough to go by them. He can kind of bully ball smaller guys. So just shooting unlocks all those things for him. He can have the ball a little bit more now and play make and make short roll passes and stuff like that. So we'll see if he shoots it. I think they'll have a pretty good year this year. At the end of the day, everybody's going to take a shot at a reasonable number on a 6'8 guy who plays some defense. So I think he's going to be around, you know, in NBA rotations for a long time, but it's the difference between being an eighth man and a fourth, fifth guy is just how well he shoots it. And I think I'm kind of stuck somewhere in the middle. As he's probably best off the bench, but he's a decent piece to have on a playoff team, maybe.
Justin Vucevic. I believe I read a report that he's going to be staying in the EuroLeague or Europe for another year. So draft and stash guy. I mean, big man can shoot, had a great combine. But I mean, just what's the overall sentiment? Is he the long-term answer at center, or same thing? Is he like Obali, still too raw to answer that question right now?
Yeah, I was a little surprised that they made that pick, just given the people they've put in that front office that haven't been the folks like traditionally to prioritize, like a 7-foot guy who's never really going to defend super well and just kind of shoots it. But maybe you need one of those guys, and it's worth seeing if you can get him at 42. So I don't mind the pick. I do think it's – we talked about this on our podcast today. I do mind with Jihadi White, who played for the Wizards, and we had Atan Thomas on, who played for the Wizards, and they both thought it was a little weird that they didn't make more of a move to bring him over in a lost year, because they're going to send him back to Partizan, and that's a really, really good EuroLeague team. They're going to be stacked. They just added PJ Dozier, that was a good NBA player before he got hurt. Like, he probably won't play that much. He played less than 15 minutes a game last year. He's probably set to not play much more than that, if even maybe a little less. So that's surprising to me. There were some rumblings that they were going to loan him out to a Greek team that his dad coaches. That appears to have fallen through. So if you're going to send him back to Europe and not even really have him play enough to develop, why not try to bring him over and at least give him 35 minutes a game with the go-go or something to let him actually just get some run, be in your system. He's already played European basketball. Like, let's let him adjust to NBA life and speed and things like that and terminology. Just get him in your building, I think, would have been a smart move. So can't really tell you how good he'll actually end up being, but I think I would have like sped up the learning curve to have him here for this year in some context. And learning from guys like Gallinari and Muscala, who are other stretch bigs, I think would have been helpful for him too.
If Gallinari and Muscala on the roster, which we're going to get to, sure, obviously. Sure. Last guy I have is Johnny Davis. Obviously, rough rookie year, but this guy, year before, had a huge sophomore breakout in college for Wisconsin. Obviously, you guys took him, I believe it was 9th overall.
10th, yeah.
And rookie year was rough. Like, I think rough is an understatement. Like, again, he was a hell of a college player. He was an All-American, but it was such a he came on a little bit towards the end of the year, the final, I'd say, 10 to 15 games, once the Wizards kind of, okay, playing is not really in sight anymore. But, I mean, just what's this consensus around Johnny Davis right now?
I think most of the fan base hates the pick, and the remainder are like optimistic at now best case scenario is he turns himself into a role player, which kind of where I'm at, like a less athletic Courtney Lee. If he can be that kind of guy, I would take that. I think he'll defend at like a pretty high level long-term here. You saw him like right away in the G League get after people. He's one of the better shot blocking guards the Wizards have had, probably the best one since John Wall. He's got a nose for the ball. He's good positionally, strong. So he was hurt a lot last year, apparently a lot of hip stuff. And if you're kind of limited athletically or explosively anyway, having a hip injury that lingers throughout the year is going to make you look worse. You're not going to get lift on your shot. He wasn't the most efficient player at Wisconsin anyway. So I think kind of everything just sort of worked against him. And he looked a lot better in the second summer league, still was super inefficient, but he wasn't scared. He was confident. He got after it. He moved the ball. So I think at some point he kind of peaks as like a 7th, 8th kind of guy.
So those are really the main building blocks. Wizards are kind of starting from scratch, yeah, if that's the terminology you want to use. But we have those four guys.
Kispert's the other one, I think, probably worth mentioning. I think he was 5th in or top 5 in the league in 3 points made or 3-pointers made and 3-point percentage both over the final 30-35 games. I don't have the stat in front of me, but he shot the shit out of it down the, you know, back third of the season. And I think maybe he's a guy you could see if he makes sense longer term. If not, you could probably flip him to a contender that needs some shooting. So he's a reasonable enough piece to get flipped, and he's got another full year, you know, here left before they have to make a decision on him long term.
So those are really the core five, in addition to obviously Paul and Tyus and Kuzma and Daniel Gafford, we haven't really mentioned, but I think Daniel Gafford, you know, is serviceable. I think my philosophy would be, as an NBA GM, if I don't have a Joel Embiid or Nikola Jokic, I'm allocating all my resources into wings. Sure. I make sure I have great shooting, a pretty good point guard, a stable point guard, maybe not Taj Jones, maybe a little bit better, but a guy like that, unless again, same thing, also you got like a Dame Lillard or Steph Curry. And then center's my, you know, look at Kevon Looney. He's phenomenal. He's four rings. I think Daniel Gafford is fine.
For the money he makes too, it's not a bad deal.
For a rebuilding team or for a contender, I think Daniel Gafford's fine.
Yeah. You can talk yourself into $13 million for him if he's platooned with another big that complements him. So I think that's another really easily tradable contract. The problem is they have no other bigs on the roster, so they can't really move him at any point here. So we're going to have to see what they do behind him, I think.
Well, he has 2 more years on his deal after this year.
Right.
So it's not an urgent need to trade him this.
No, I don't think they should. I'm just saying if you wanted to, I think you'd get a pretty good return for him from somebody that needed a pick.
Absolutely. So I basically assembled a list. And by a list, I mean there's probably about 18 teams on here that I see as feasible trade partners with Washington for, let's say, right now I'm not trying to move Kuzma, I'm not trying to trade Paul. I didn't even really consider Gafford, though we could talk about it. What I'm looking at is the guys we discussed earlier, all the mid-tier guys that could either be packaged for a more bloated contract with an asset attached to it that are all expiring. The Landry Shamets, the Delone Wrights, the Gallinaris, the Muscalas. I believe there's one more guy. Obviously, Tyus Jones we talked about is expiring, but...
Could you throw Xavier Cooks in there as a, minimum filler kind of guy, or Anthony Gill.
And before we do this, though, there's one more thing I want to talk about. The Golden State trade, where you ended up getting Paul, gets expanded on draft night because the Warriors desperately wanted Trayce Jackson-Hayes from Indiana.
Yep.
I know he's about guys who were building blocks, and we failed to talk about Patrick Baldwin Jr., who was a first-round pick as early as last year's draft.
Mm-hmm.
And Ryan Rollins, who, friend of the pod, JT Shoemate played with in college.
Nice. There you go.
So, what do we think of those two guys? I mean, Rollins was a hell of a player, but he played in the MAC in college. So, and then Jason Preston, same thing, came out of the MAC. JT Shoemate's going to kill me if he's listening to this, but we don't know if those guys could, be NBA players. It's tough coming out of a conference like that. And same thing with Patrick Baldwin. While he was a 5-star recruit, he ends up playing at Wisconsin-Milwaukee for his father and has a disastrous freshman year. Golden State takes a shot on him. And my biggest concern with PBJ is that Golden State is probably definitely top five in the league in terms of player development. They're trading him for the 48th pick in the draft for Trayce Jackson-Davis. And I know there was obviously luxury tax implications on that as well. But, I mean, what do you think? Can the Wizards rehabilitate either of those guys? I mean, Rollins didn't play much as rookie. Jury's still out. But I'm not a big Patrick Baldwin Jr. guy. I'm not a big fan of either of them there is, but...
I'm super big on Rollins coming out of college. I was actually super big on Jason Preston, too. So maybe I'm a softie for that particular conference. But... it's fine. You take a shot on two guys like that. If one of them turns into a rotation player, that's a win as a throw in for a deal like that. I'm with you. I think it's concerning that the Warriors punted on the 27th pick in one draft to trade him for the 57th pick the next year or however, whatever that actually worked out to be. So that's not a great deal, from how that looks optically, but, it's worth a shot. He was a guy, like I said, the top five-star recruit. And then Rollins was really good in the G League for most of the year last year. Neither of them looked great in Summer League, but they looked okay. At the end of the day, it's worth taking a shot on a 6'9 guy to see if he can shoot. And can Rollins come in and be a microwave scorer? He's 6'2" and a half, but with 6'9" wingspan. Like, so there's some physical attributes there. And I don't know. If either of them are solid, that's a steal.
Yeah, and that's the type of flyer you as a rebuilding team should take. You know, more bites at the apple and everything like that. So
I'd rather fill out the roster with them than Xavier Cooks and Anthony Gill at this point. I know you need a couple vets on the team, but take as many swings on guys that maybe you can rehab into something that people thought they were at some point.
Yeah, and these guys are, again, they just finished, both of them, I think, just finished a rookie year. So, like, they have such little NBA experience. We have no idea. They could be any, not anything, obviously, but they could be the floor, they could be the ceiling, we don't know, but there's one way to find out.
Worth a shot.
And giving them minutes at the NBA level, which a Wizard should be able to do, is going to help you figure that out sooner rather than later.
Exactly.
Golden State obviously didn't have that luxury, which I don't even know if that's a luxury because they're a pretty good team, but okay. So as I said, I assembled this list of potential trade partners for the Wizards. Mostly, I did this with the idea of those expiring mid-tier salaries in mind. Mm-hmm. The first one that was screaming at me was the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Okay.
I do have Ty Washington on this list. I have seen they cut him as I was prepping for this episode.
Yep.
But their roster is now at 20 guys, and they need to be at 15 by the end of training camp. And I think 19... I don't know if all 19 of the contracts are guaranteed. I don't know if like Aaron Wiggins and Jeremiah Robinson Earl are guaranteed. I don't know when the guaranteed date is.
Sure that both are, but I have to pull it up.
Okay. But either way, I believe they have about 19 guaranteed contracts on their books and they need to cut that to 15. So I'm thinking like the Wizards could do like a 3-for-1 if they're going to buy out Gallinari example anyway.
The problem is the Wizards are at 17 contracts already too. So like there's only so much swapping they can do for people.
Yeah, but they're at the point where as long as they're not going to go into the tax, they could eat the money and cut guaranteed.
Oh, I agree. Gill and Cooks could hit the road.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking like hold on. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking like either Landry Shamet or Delone Wright to OKC. However you want to salary match it for, like, OKC has Usman Garuba. We just talked about the need for a big behind Gafford now with Vucevic not coming over. Jeremiah Robinson Earl kind of could do the same. Yeah. He's more of a small ball five, but he could do it. I had Ty Washington on this list. I would be fine if the Wizards, you know, threw a two-way at him or even a standard contract at him.
They have an open two-way right now. That seems like a no-brainer to me to just take a shot at it.
Aaron Wiggins I take a shot at.
I love Wiggins. I'm a Maryland alum. I hate all the Maryland draft prospects. I love Wiggins, and he's good every time I see him play. I would kill to add a dude like that, another athletic wing that can shoot the ball. Like, again, just make it happen. Like, I would be so excited for that.
And you might be excited about this next guy, depending how you feel, because I feel like this guy's very polarizing. I actually have real estate on his island.
I'm not with you on this one. I already know where you're going without even having to say it.
Alexei Pokusevski.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not
a Poku guy, but again, it's worth it to take a shot. Like between he and Patrick Baldwin, you just see if one of your 6'9" guys can handle and shoot
and
enough.
Cool volley.
Right. Yeah. Just throw some dudes out there and see what happens. I wouldn't hate it given where they are right now. I'm not a fan of him personally, but I'm okay with that kind of player, so might as well.
I think, you know, just I don't want to be stuck on OKC too long, but they have so many guys that are so deep. I just don't see, you know, Poku really being in their plans at this point anymore. So that's a guy that, you know, a swing like that. We just talked about how they took the swing with the Warriors trade. A trade like this that I'm proposing with Garuba or Poku or Robinson Earl or Wiggins, and even if you need to take back like Victor Oladipo, I know they traded. Mm. OKC traded for him for one to get the second round pick from Miami for the salary relief, but also they did the same thing with Davis Bertans, basically to get a larger contract. Those are the material guys you want to make another trade. That trade obviously hasn't come to fruition for OKC, and maybe if they realize it doesn't, sure, we'll give you Shaman and Wright for Oladipo, Wiggins and Poku. I would love that for the Wizards.
And Oladipo's from Maryland. I mean, I think that'd be another thing. You could sell a couple extra tickets from the Oladipo Hive. You know, why not? I'm all for that move.
And there's a veteran with experience, yeah. Former All-NBA guy that
good you dude. Know, yeah. 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 I think so, that makes a lot of sense for them. Makes a lot of sense for both teams.
So that's the one that really struck out. That's why I spent so much time on it. This one you're probably going to hate. Brooklyn. Would you trade Jordan Poole and Landry Shamet for Ben Simmons and a first round pick?
I would kill myself. I'll be very upfront. And I don't even mean that as hyperbole. I am so anti Ben Simmons ending up on
the Wizards. I'm a Sixers fan, so I'm with you.
I actually like Simmons in a vacuum. I actually think he'll have a pretty decent bounce back year this year. Like, I have a weird feeling that that's going to happen just because it'd be a very NBA thing for people to be back in him all again. It just doesn't make sense for the Wizards to me to try to do it. I think Poole has as much upside as Simmons does, and you at least know Poole is going to play. So I think that's a lateral to worse move, even if it works out for you.
Charlotte Hornets I put on here for either a trade involving Gordon Hayward, which I don't think makes much sense because I believe Hayward is now expiring. So Hornets would probably set that contract play itself out rather than take on long-term money. But Rozier, if they wanted to, get off the long-term money for like a DeLone Wright, Landry Shamet, and like a second, I think that's buying very low on Terry Rozier, but he's very repetitive with Poole and he's pretty repetitive with Kuzma in terms of those are three guys that are high-level role guys, but they all are going to need the ball in their hands and need shots. That would be my concern, but I think Rozier's a guy that you could probably buy pretty low on.
Yeah, I just think by the time you do kind of recoup some value from him, he's probably too old to be, he's 28 or 29 at this point. Yep. Probably a little too old to be part of your longer-term plans, just to have too many guys in that age group, the late 20s guys. So we've probably seen the best of Rozier. So even if he gets back to that level, it still probably doesn't get you all that much down the road. So I would probably pass on that one unless you can milk a late first out of it at the very least.
Next one I have is Cleveland. If you haven't noticed, most of these are in alphabetical order. What about something simple? They're talking about buying out Danilo Gallinari anyway. There's a reason they haven't, because I'm sure they're trying to use that contract to salary match and everything we've been talking about this episode. Yeah. What about Danilo Gallinari for Ricky Rubio in a second?
Sure. Done.
Okay. Easy enough. Yeah,
I think he makes a lot of sense there. And they kind of missed having Kevin Love on their team in the playoffs last year, which was wild. And maybe Gallinari does that for you. And
that's what I was thinking too.
Or even one of the wings, could Denny make some sense for them? They just seem to be grasping at straws for a three. So could he fit in there as a kind of a playmaker passer if he can hit enough shots? He's a better shooter than Isaac Okoro, and Okoro got minutes for them, and he's probably not a worse defender. So maybe he makes some sense.
Dallas Mavericks. Been dying to get out JaVale McGee, which the minute that contract was signed, most of us were like, what the hell are they doing?
Yeah,
giving JaVale McGee a 3-year deal at the, I believe it's about $6 million, but I think it was the taxpayer MLE at the time. Let's say Gallinari or DeLone, depending. I'm sure you get DeLone, you get a better asset attached with JaVale, but a framework of that trade essentially. JaVale gives you the body behind Gafford. He has championship pedigree experience as a veteran in the locker room. And, you're probably getting a second round pick for it.
Yeah, I'm not mad at that. It'd be a reunion with McGee. We're the ones who drafted him, and he was a real knucklehead then. So if you can have this redemption story of bringing McGee back now that he's a veteran championship player, I don't know. Maybe there's something there.
I put Chicago on here just to mention Tyus Jones, which we already talked about. I would love Tyus Jones in Chicago, but I think Chicago's kind of the new Washington, them in Toronto you're going to have to blow it up eventually. So I don't love the fact that Chicago would have to, give up assets for a point guard, but would you swap Tyus Jones for Kobe White?
I'm not a Kobe White guy personally, but that kind of guy makes some sense. I would have loved the Ayo Dosunmu to Washington move over the offseason, but something like that, I'm fine with. Makes sense to go a little younger and at least see if there's something there.
What about Tyus Jones and let's say DeLone Wright for Lonzo Ball? Or is that something you just can't even, with his health concerns, can't even touch?
Yeah, if you're not sure he's ever going to play again, I just don't know if it's really worth that. Again, by the how old is Lonzo at this point, too? So
yeah,
even if he gets healthy, he's probably shortened to, you know, the long-term end of his career. So even if you had him, like, I just don't know that you can, like, recoup a lot for him.
The next team I have is the Denver Nuggets. This one's a team I didn't specifically put together a trade for, but they could use a DeLon Wright, man. I mean, they just signed Reggie Jackson, basically the backup point guard. DeLon Wright could kind of be the poor man's version of what Bruce Brown was for them.
Do they still have Zeke Nagy?
They do.
I love Zeke Nagy. Okay, I would do that in a second. Done.
There you go. Okay. Then Detroit. What do you think of Killian Hayes? Because he is a guy who's, they just drafted Marcus Sasser. They traded into the first round again after using the lottery pick to get Marcus Sasser. They have Jaden Ivey, Cade Cunningham's healthy. They have another guard.
Monte Morris
is traded for as well. There you go. Right. That's what I was missing. So it's just like, what are they going to do with Killian Hayes? He's expiring. I would love Washington to shot on him.
Could you do Denny for Killian Hayes in a second and flip our trash for your trash? No, I'm sorry. Denny fans are, I'm going to get mad at me. I don't mean trash, but you know, but like younger guys that the jury's still out on, potential reclamation projects there. I don't know. I think he makes some sense. He's athletic. He plays defense. There was like a little month long stint where he looked pretty good this year. Maybe you can see if he can build on that in a fresh place. He's clearly been passed over, so it's got to have killed the confidence there. We need like a longer term guard prospect. They added Jared Butler to a two way. I'd love to take another shot at a guard somewhere. So whether it's Hayes, you know, I don't really care too much, but I'd take a shot at someone that fits his kind of profile.
I put Golden State on this list. I mentioned Jonathan Kuminga.
I
don't see a feasible trade unless they really felt strongly about a Denis type guy. But I just, these are the type of shots you need to take. A young guy who, like, I would have loved if the Wizards got Obi Toppin. I know he went to Indiana, but a guy, like, we keep talking about just taking these shots on young guys, just like Killian Hayes. Jonathan Kuminga is another one where clearly Golden State doesn't have him in their plans because they're competitive and he still needs a year or two. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe we don't know. He's just stuck behind Draymond Green. We don't know. But
He kills them money-wise, so getting off that deal for another dude that could reasonably fill that role as your window's closing, I'd give them all of the serviceable veteran guys on our team and anyone else young that they wanted for a shot at Kuminga.
Indiana, I'm thinking of a deal where you would just, you know, take Daniel Tice's money and get, you know, a second-round pick for Gallinari could work for Indiana. I think DeLone could work for Indiana, but you know, DeLone maybe 2 seconds. I think he has a little bit more value than Gallinari does, but and probably not a little bit more, probably more than a little bit more. But something like that I have. What about Miami? Obviously, they're waiting for the Dame Lillard saga to play itself out. But in the event that that doesn't come to fruition, what about like Shamet and DeLone Wright for Duncan Robinson and some type of asset just to get off Robinson's money?
Yeah, throw in Jovic, something like that, or they won't give up Jaime Jaquez. I love Jaime. I would do that in a second if you could get
him. What about Haywood Highsmith?
It's not the worst move in the world. I mean, somebody like that that's young, I'm okay with. You know, any of those kinds of things would be fine. I don't think any of these guys are in a long-term future, so if you get something back for them, cool, let's do it.
Pelicans, Kyron Lewis for DeLone Wright.
If you find a way to get Darian Sebron somehow in that deal, I'll make whatever trade you want to make. I love Sebron, and I think he'd be a good pickup for the Wizards, a guy that could create, you know, another big wing switchable kind of size. So something like that would be good. Lewis is another buy-low guy. It's exactly what we're talking about. I think that's a good one. He makes some sense here.
I also did put a caveat in that trade that you might have to throw in like a Valanciunas and Gafford type swap too, just because the Pelicans have never paid the tax in the history of the organization. And that trade would have put them in the tax. I'm sure you guys get their team involved, do something, but that is a caveat that I put. So we talked about Gafford. We both like Gafford. So Next one I have is the Knicks. Same thing as Duncan Robinson. Let's just take Evan Fournier with an asset attached. He's actually expiring, so I don't know what kind of asset the Knicks would even really give unless they thought like DeLone Wright or Gallinari or Muscala could be a legit contributor for them.
Yeah, if there was like a burning need. Yeah, somebody like that. Like they needed a shooter or point of attack defender. Like, okay, I could see maybe them wanting to do that, giving us a second to make the move. Fine. I'm cool with that.
Orlando, what about Jonathan Isaac? He has basically, I know his contract each year has less and less guarantees on it. Is it next year that it becomes non-guaranteed, I believe? I'm not completely sure, but there is a point where that contract becomes completely non-guaranteed because he didn't make the games played threshold the year before.
Right. Yeah, it's like an easier pill to swallow at this point. And like Jonathan Isaac, in a vacuum, like, is the kind of player the Wizards have needed for like a very long time. And I would be all for like that archetype player being added to the roster. The personal politics stuff might make it a little tougher to swallow, but it's, hey, if you think he's healthy and your doctors clear him and you think he might actually get on the court for you at some point, that's a decent reclamation option too. And if you're not giving up anybody in your long-term future to take a shot at it, I would do that.
I did note Portland has a traded player exception big enough to take on DeLone Wright.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with Miami. They're going to wait for the Dame saga to play itself out to see what direction they're going in, right, everything. And I think DeLone Wright would put them in the tax. So that's another thing that we would have to factor in. What about Sacramento? They could really use a DeLone Wright or even a Shaman with the shooting. Sure. I didn't put together a specific trade, but something, I don't know. Probably just more of an asset you're getting and salary matching, like an Alex Len and someone else type guy. But
I just think at some point the Wizards are going to have to find a way to get some big on this roster. So if it's flipping and Landry Shamet for Alex Len, and if you can get something out of it, I would do that just because it makes a little more sense roster balance wise. Like, I don't know how you play Shamet and Kispert and Denny and Johnny Davis and Koulibaly, like all these kind of wing ish guys. So just to make the roster make a little bit more sense, I'm not opposed to that at all.
I talked about OKC as my favorite trade partner with the Wizards. Here's my second favorite. San Antonio.
Okay.
They need shooting desperately. I think that's a big thing because you look at the starting lineup, it's probably Wemby. I'm hearing Zach Collins is going to start at the five. Yeah. Then you have Devin Vassell. You have Trey Keldon Jones. Johnson. And you have Jeremy Sohan.
Keldon Johnson starts, I would imagine, for that.
That's probably the Zach Collins spot. I'm just saying, based on speculation you want to have heard. Keldon Johnson, and then Malachi Branham is the one guy who's like, okay, he's a knockdown shooter. And even he's not an elite shooter. So San Antonio desperately needs shooting. And aside from Trey Jones, they have who? Devontae Graham and Blake Wesley as their point guards. I think they could use a DeLone Wright type. So I think if they could pull off something like Shamet and DeLone Wright for, I don't know, Doug McDermott for anything, even if they take on a Gallinari, just a guy you could shoot that might have some size with DeLone Wright since they need a point guard. I'm just thinking something along those lines. It's obviously it's not perfect. I'm just kind of coming up with
If you're the Wizards to take their trash for our trash, you probably have to get something back to want to do that. So they throw in a second or something like that. Cool. Like, let's do it. Blake Wesley? Are they willing to give up on him at this point yet? Is he worth it for the Wizards to take on a shot? He's been really bad. And he didn't even look good in summer league from what I saw. So I don't know.
Last one I have is a fun one. You guys will get Otto Porter back.
There you go.
Toronto will get DeLone Wright back. And then Toronto will probably get some kind of asset, obviously, because I think DeLone Wright obviously has more value than Otto Porter at this point.
Yeah, I mean, again, if basically it just turns into you flipping Wright for a second at that point, I'm fine. I think, again, if Monte Morris got you a second, you know, maybe you hold out to the deadline and hope some team gets desperate enough that maybe they'll give you the 27th pick or something. You know, like, I don't know. Maybe that's what you wait for. Otherwise, they're all kind of like minimal deals. I think the OKC one's the one that makes the most sense. Even if you could just get like a Jeremiah Robinson Earl, someone young enough to kind of make sense for your timeline, I think that's that's kind of worth it.
Is there any of these trades that you have a favorite of that we talked about?
Oh, the OKC one's the one that makes like by far the most sense. And probably for every other team in the league, they're all like waiting to see if they just get desperate enough to cut somebody so they can pick them up outright. But if I'm or a team like the Wizards, I'm incentivized to try to do that. I think they want to try to make the playoffs this year. So three for two, even that helps them a little bit. And then they can figure out another deal or two for one, something like that. I would try to do if I were them, or they could cut one of these other guys outright. Cool. I mean, I'd give them a second back just to get two of the younger guys. And if they took one of our older vets back on, so I'd give them something to make the deal happen. They love assets. Like, why not?
OKC loved having Mike Muscala. They traded him last year to Boston, but I think they would love to get him back for like a Jeremiah Robinson and Damon Wiggins or something like that.
I would do that in like literally heartbeat. I'd give them something with it. Muscala can be their Nick Collison 2.0. It'll be great.
There you go. Washington Wizards regular season win total, 23-24. I'm sure you guys have talked about this at some point on the pod. Over?
Barely, but over.
I don't know. I think it was, I apologize if there was somebody else and I'm forgetting who it was. I think it was Sam Vecenie on the Game Theory podcast. He was talking about the Hornets over and under. And I think he said I didn't fact check this, so I apologize. I don't know if it's right or wrong. But I believe it was something like every year there's at least four teams that win 25 games or less, which seemed kind of on call, but I was kind of like, are there really that many bad teams every year? So I started thinking, how many teams are worse than Washington? That if you're saying they're over 24 and a half, you have to assume, okay, you don't have to assume, but is there going to be four teams that don't go? Like, is this year that is broken, that there's not four teams that win less than 25 games?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're going to be right around that number. I would take the over, but that's more just I think they're going to be like sneaky competitive with guys. They might not actually win a lot of these games, but they're young and they've got people that have something to prove. I wouldn't want to play them in March. So I think they can win enough games late in the year when teams aren't taking them seriously and they're resting the guys for the playoffs and all that kind of stuff to get them over that number. But if you told me they won 24, I wouldn't be shocked. Like, I'm not. We have a certain amount of the fan base, I think, that's like, oh, we're going to win just as many games as we won last year. And I think that personally that's crazy. But 27, like if they won 27 games, would I be crazy for thinking that? I just think there's so much parity at this point. Mm-hmm. And for most of the years he's looking at that stat, these teams were incentivized to really bottom out. And they're really not anymore. Yeah. And you have more people resting their better players. People care less about playoff seeding. I just think everyone sort of regresses to the mean a little bit. You have less 60 win teams, less 20, teams, and you meet somewhere closer to the middle, would be my guess.
I'm just thinking like Houston's obviously trying to win now. OKC is ready, if they weren't last year, to really be competitive. Detroit was bad last year, but Kate Cunningham, you're going to have a full season of him. Orlando, I think, will be better. So unless Toronto or Chicago start bottoming out, I don't know how many teams are worse than Washington. I really don't.
Does Portland blow it up at some point? Charlotte is definitely worse. Charlotte is definitely worse, in my opinion. I mean, I think, there's a couple teams in there that gets plucky. We'll see. Like if Wembanyama only plays 25 games and Devin Vassell's hurt again, how good is San Antonio actually going to end up being? So there's a bunch of other teams all kind of in that mix. If they end up winning 20 games and they're terrible, like it wouldn't shock me. I personally, if I were going to bet it, I would take the over.
Last exercise I'm going to have you do. I am going to ask you the rotation of the Wizards. So I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I'm assuming Tyus and Paul are starting backwards.
Yep.
Kuzma starts at the 4. Gafford starts at the 5.
Yep.
Who is the starting small forward on opening night?
I think they'll go Kispert.
They'll go Kispert too.
It's probably between him and Denny. That's a really terrible defensive perimeter. If you start Kispert with that group, maybe Denny helps you a little bit, but then it also kills your spacing. If you could combine those two into one player somehow, I'd feel much better about it. But I think one of those two is kind of the gimme option at this point. Maybe you do it with Denny just to see what he looks like, and you make a decision on him if you want to keep him around or not beyond this year, and then you start Kispert once you've moved on from Denny, if that happens. So that's the only thing I could think of, but that seems like the no-brainer six guys for five spots.
And then who's – so we talked about those six.
Sure.
Who's the next guys in the rotation? I mean, we don't really have a backup center. Maybe it's Muscala if, you know, there's not a trade made right away. I think he's the only really feasible other big man on the roster.
Could Gallo play some backup 5 minutes? Eh, you know, I think he'll probably play a little bit early just to see one, to show other teams he's recovered enough to want to maybe take a shot on trading for him. Maybe they feature him just a little bit there. I think DeLon Wright is probably pretty clearly in the rotation. Just, again, same kind of deal. You show him that, show teams that he looks good, and maybe they remember that that's a guy that they could use, you know, that sort of thing. But
Then Johnny Davis and Koulibaly, you're going to want to get on the floor, but they might spend time in the G League as well. So,
yeah, at least early, as you kind of clear out some of those vets, I'm sure they both play a lot more the second half of the year than they do the first. But yeah, it's going to be kind of weird. Like, do you have to play Shamit to try to trade him? Like, does he have to get some minutes? So it's kind of like a weird situation for them to be in. And they've got a lot of like back half of the rotation guys that they've got to figure out what they want to do with and who to prioritize.
Okay, that's all the questions I have. Is there anything we did not discuss regarding the Wizards that you think is pertinent and, you know, part of the story of what the season will be or what the offseason was?
I guess just curious on your kind of overall takeaway from how they've been this offseason. You were my go-to, should be in a front office kind of guy, so... what do you think of the job this group has done and this sort of front office dream team they think they've assembled?
So I'm going to say this with the caveat that it's still up in the air because I want to see what they do with the guys they got. Like, they're going to flip Shamit probably at some point. Mm-hmm. They're going to – all these expiring guys are still going to make moves. But I think given Beal's no trade clause, given Porzingis had leverage because he could have opted out, so he could not a no trade clause, but he had some leverage to determine where he went. Mm-hmm. And given Kuzma was a free agent, I think they did pretty well. I just think the fact that they were willing to finally blow it up is a win of an offseason for them. Because we talked about that they haven't done it for years.
Yeah, I'm totally with you.
So, yeah, I mean, as we talked about how much I like the pool trade, I'm fine with the Kuzma re-signing. I think they did fine. And I think their front office is getting a lot of BS from just, I don't want to say Wizards fans specifically because I don't know, but just from fans in general that, oh, they didn't get a first with Beal or Porzingis and they re-signed Kuzma, what the hell are they doing, blah, blah, blah. But given the hands they were dealt, this new front office did not give Beal a no-trade clause. They did not give Porzingis a player option. The Wizards didn't even give Porzingis a player option. I mean, so a lot of the stuff that went wrong just is not their fault. So I'm not going to fault them. I think this new front office did a fine job, and I'm excited to, you know, see what they do going forward, given with the amount of mid-tier expiring contracts they have. I can't emphasize that enough. They have plenty of tradable guys to get and accumulate more assets with, and that's what I'm excited to see, how they navigate that.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think they've set themselves up well for the future. And that's kind of all you can ask for in the first year of a rebuild when you have the deck stacked against you.
Absolutely. So, Matt, where could everyone find you? What are you up to? Is this your chance to plug yourself?
I appreciate that. Believe in Wizards, BLEAV. It's myself, former NBA player Jihadi White. We've got some other player interviews coming up here with former teammates of his. So if you like some old school NBA, they both played with Michael Jordan. That was what we talked about a decent amount on today's episode. Also talked about what kind of happened with the center position and how they're just not the same kind of player they both were. Those guys are kind of gone from the league. So some stuff like that. If you're interested in the Wizards, you know, come find us.
Twitter, you could find him at Mad Moderno.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I will talk to you guys next episode. Again, I apologize for the hiatus and I'm planning on, you know, getting back on a normal routine and normal schedule. So thank you guys for listening And I will talk to you next week on my next team preview. Thanks for listening, guys.